Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films It Ain't Over, Beau Is Afraid, and Little Richard, I Am Everything.
Well, I would like to talk about three very different kinds of movies this time around. Actually, I shouldn't say that because two of them are documentaries, and two of them deal with people very famous in popular culture, in one case sports, and the other case rock and roll. But our third movie is very different from those two. So in various ways, these movies are all different from one another. I'd like to start with It Ain't Over, which is written and directed by Sean Mullen, and it is a documentary, and it is about Yogi Berra. And of course, Yogi Berra was a legendary baseball catcher and did other things in the world of baseball. I am not a baseball person. I've never been particularly into spectator sports. So I can't say I ever paid in-depth attention to Yogi Berra. However, when I was a kid, he was still very much around on the baseball scene. And I must say, even I was very aware of who Yogi Berra was. Yogi Berra, Mickey Mantle, a few others who were really, really legendary, even for kids like me who were not especially into sports. And I think that Yogi Berra remains pretty famous to this day. And, of course, he is famous for his enormous baseball-playing skills, which were quite remarkable. And this movie traces his rise in the world of sports and his entry into baseball and all of that. But Yogi Berra is also really famous for his use of language, which was, shall we say, more colorful than correct. But one of the famous things he said is, "It ain't over till it's over." And that is where this movie gets its title from. Of course, Yogi Berra's life eventually was over. He's been dead for quite a few years now. So this movie does have a time when it is over. But it still makes a catchy title for the movie. It's also, by the way, one of the things that Yogi Berra said, one of his quote-unquote colorful sayings, which is totally true. It ain't over till it's over. It just never is. He also said other things such as, when you come to a fork in the road, take it, etc., etc. Now, one of the things that emerges in the course of this documentary is that he became a real celebrity, and he was involved in commercials and endorsing products and stuff like that. And there were people who were writing for him. And there's one point in the movie where a woman who was writing stuff for him to say said, "I'm not sure whether he said that or whether I actually wrote that." But it doesn't really matter because it being part of the Yogi Berra legend. So that's sort of amusing. And the movie certainly does have a lot of examples of him saying his cute and clever and colorful things. So that's just fine. It also has a fair amount of baseball lore in it. Has interviews with other baseball players, interviews with members of the Berra family and so forth. He was also a real family guy, so that's very nice. And the movie covers all of those bases. It is, as a documentary, it is very conventional. Yogi Berra was famous for his unconventional uses of language, although as a baseball player, he was, of course, very conventional, although very great also. In this case, we have a movie which is just goes... It's absolutely by the numbers. It follows all the correct patterns for a documentary about a famous person and a famous sports person. But that said, it is colorful, it is interesting, and I had a good time watching it, even though I'm still not, all these decades later, really a baseball person or a spectator sports person. So I had a good time watching it, which means that probably almost anybody who sees it will have a good time watching it. I can recommend it, not with great enthusiasm, but with some enthusiasm. It Ain't Over is a nice documentary, fun to watch, and I was a little bit sorry when it was over. Second movie for today, Little Richard, I Am Everything. And oh, that title does capture something about Little Richard, the great rock and roll singer, who was, in fact, larger than life. He wasn't everything, but it would be very much like him to say, "I am everything," because he sort of acted like that sometimes. Now, here we have another person who became famous when I was a kid. I'm pretty old. So yeah, there he was. And as, you know, in my early years, I by the way, I loved Little Richard. And, one of his very early albums was one of my favorite long playing records. And I played it all the time. I don't think my parents appreciated that at all. But I just thought he was terrific and I thought his music was great. And I was a huge rock and roll fan when I was a kid. And, when I became aware of Little Richard and started to pay a little bit of attention to his career as it emerged in the media and so forth, it was sort of confusing to me, again, as a kid, back in the 50s. Because sometimes he seemed to be a really wild, sort of insane, over-the-top character, and a very, this is something that people didn't really talk about at the time, but a very gay character. My gosh, he seemed to be a real homosexual. Now, you couldn't use that word in the popular media back in those days, but that's the way he seemed. And then other times, he seemed to be really religious and evangelical and preaching the word of the Lord. And I used to wonder, well, how do these things go together? Is there something I'm not getting here? Well, later on, I realized that, like some other rock and rollers, I think Bob Dylan, very, very different in so many ways, but is similar in this respect. He went through phases. Now, Bob Dylan, of course, has very consciously and deliberately and brilliantly reinvented himself. Sometimes it seems like just every few years in his career. Little Richard wasn't exactly like that. He was far more intuitive, far more instinctive, far more just sort of, to use a musical metaphor, playing things by ear. But yeah, sometimes he would be this outrageous, over-the-top gay character having orgies and stuff like that. And other times in his life, he would be devoutly religious to the point where he went to college as an adult and got a degree in religion. So he was very serious about that stuff, and by the time he got to the end of his life, he was very, very serious about it, as an old person who knew that his end was coming, who knew, in Yogi Berra's terms, that pretty soon it would be over because it was over. So yeah, these two things coexisted in his life, and that by itself, I think, makes the documentary, which, by the way, was directed by Lisa Cortes, makes it very, very compelling to watch for pretty much anybody, whether you're into rock and roll or not. He was one of these real self-inventing and self-reinventing celebrity. Now, again, as a correct documentary does, it covers the bases. It goes through the course of his life from his very early life on, later on, and later on, and later on, and we discover how he became into rock and roll, and how he became a star, and how he went through these different phases in his life, and was consumed by appetites in some phases, and consumed by guilt over those appetites in other phases, and it's all very interesting to follow that process. And of course, the movie, again, as correct documentaries do, brings in a lot of people to talk about all this on camera. So we have everybody from other rock and rollers such as Mick Jagger, Paul McCartney, Pat Boone, who I wouldn't exactly call a rock and roller, but who was a very popular singer, again, back in the Little Richard era, and who was, in a way, the opposite kind, the totally wholesome, religious, family guy who did everything according to the correct middle-class white playbook of the day, and yet he actually covered some Little Richard songs, ridiculously, it may be, but there he was. So he shows up in the movie from time to time, Tom Jones, Mick Jagger, and various others. John Waters, by the way, makes an appearance, I think, because he's sort of obligatory for naughty guy documentaries. Anyway, people comment on Little Richard's life along the way. We see a little bit of footage from his very early career, a fair amount of footage from his later phases of his career, and so that's always fun to see, too. I have a theory that rock and roll biopics, that is, movies about rock and rollers, and by the way, I should plug my book here, Rock and Roll Movies, which came out a number of years ago from Rutgers University Press, and I put forth this theory there that rock and roll biopics, that is, fictionalized movies that center on the lives of famous rock and rollers, ones that have been done on everybody from Ritchie Valens to Ray Charles to a long list of others, are almost always good. Not always, but almost always. Documentaries, you know, it depends on how good the material is. Now, Little Richard, I Am Everything has some really good material in it. I can't say that it's always inspired, but it's always fun to just watch and listen to Little Richard. I wish it got a little bit more into the substance of his music. I mean, he was famous for his wailing and whooping and all that, but, you know, it's incredibly controlled wailing and whooping. I would have liked more about how he trained his voice, because even though he's not an opera singer, he was an old-fashioned 50s-type rock and roller, that voice was really disciplined, and I would have liked more about that in the movie. But what is in the movie is really, really fun to watch and interesting, and Little Richard is a fascinating character. So for anybody who's into rock and roll, for anybody who's into sort of mid-century and late 20th century pop music or pop culture generally, Little Richard, I Am Everything. It's not everything I desired, but it's a whole lot. It's a good movie, good documentary. I had a great time watching it, and I have to say, I tapped my toe quite often. Now for our final movie of the day, which is very, very different, Beau Is Afraid. And oh, it is so different from the others, and it's different from almost anything else that's out there, and that in itself makes it well worth talking about. This is a movie from Ari Aster, who specializes in horror films. His first one, Hereditary, was really, really good. I think one of the very best horror movies of recent years. Then he made a much more ambitious one called Midsommar, which I don't think is quite so successful. It's in the folk horror vein. But it's still, it's a very, very interesting and ambitious horror movie, and I give him credit for that. Now, Beau Is Afraid is what we might call a sort of horror movie, which is to say it has a lot of stuff in it that's horrific, but it doesn't follow anything like the usual horror movie formulas. And in some ways, it's not really a horror movie. It's just sort of a surrealistic, almost Kafka-esque sort of a fable. And, you know, because it breaks the mold and it does things differently, I respect it. It doesn't quite work, I think, and it certainly didn't have to be about 3 hours long, which is way longer than it needs to be and way longer than it should be. Again, I respect Ari Aster for really going his own route here. It's quite an act of creative imagination, even though I don't think it completely works as a movie. So, here we have Joaquin Phoenix, an amazing actor, not always great, but sometimes terrific. And in this movie, let's just say he makes a real impression. And he plays our main character, Beau, B-E-A-U. And yes, Beau is afraid during a lot of the movie. For most of the movie, he is trying to get to where his mother is because it's the anniversary of a death in the family. But what happens very early on in the movie is that because of a feud he has with an upstairs neighbor, the upstairs neighbor apparently being in some way out of his mind, he ends up missing his plane, losing his grasp on his passport and his keys, and he can't even get back into his apartment to get the stuff he needs to make the trip. Outside in the streets, chaos is breaking out. This is another one of these movies, and this is something I'm not very fond of, that paints cities as hell holes. So that's something else. There's all kinds of violence and chaos going out in the streets. So anyway, through a whole big part of the movie, poor Beau is trying to just get somewhere, and I won't reveal whether he ever gets there or not. Along the way, things happen. He has one thing that happens is he has a terrible accident, and he gets taken in by a lovely couple. Nathan Lane and Amy Ryan play this couple, who give him a place to stay while he recovers from his injury and sort of regroups and gets ready to get back on the road again. But things don't quite work out there, and the next thing you know, he's traveling again and trying to get on with his trip. And then eventually in the movie, he ends up out in the woods where there is a theater group that is putting out a play which appears to be about Beau, and all kinds of bizarre things take place from there. So, again, it is a movie which follows no very fixed trajectory. You never know where it's going to go next. I think that some of its risks pay off well. Some of its risks don't pay off at all. I said it was Kafka-esque, and in some ways it is, although Franz Kafka is just an infinitely higher level of artistic achievement than this movie. But I would compare it more with some of the films made by the remarkable Charlie Kaufman. Again, his movies don't always work either, but they can be pretty remarkable. I'm thinking particularly of a movie that he wrote and directed himself, Synecdoche, New York, which is another movie that just doesn't seem to really add up even on its own terms, and yet it's kind of always fascinating to watch. And I can say more or less the same thing about Beau is Afraid. I think another big influence on Beau is Afraid has to be the work of David Lynch, because there's a whole lot of just that sort of surrealistic, willfully bizarre material, narrative material, image material, acting material, as the movie goes along. Has an interesting cast. I mentioned Nathan Lane and Amy Ryan. Parker Posey shows up, Patti LuPone, Richard Kind. Interesting kind of a cast. But of course, hovering over everything and fully in the heart of everything is Joaquin Phoenix, quite a remarkable performer. Again, I don't think it's his best work, but it's good work, and it's almost always worth watching Joaquin Phoenix do pretty much anything. So, Beau is Afraid. I don't think it's a great movie, and you have to be ready for about 3 hours worth of it, but I would say don't be afraid of it. Take a chance on it. It's a movie that really takes a whole lot of creative risks, and oh, we do need that kind of movie so much in today's factory movie atmosphere. This is a film that really does break the mold, and that in itself is a good thing. And so that is my, I hope, somewhat a mold-breaking story this week.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films It Ain't Over, Beau is Afraid, and Little Richard, I Am Everything.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.